Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. And tonight we're going to have a very, very good show. And boy, the song my son made for this show is so right on. It's so spot on. You never know what you have done. Because when children are abused, okay, sexually, physically, mentally, emotionally, it affects them in such a huge way, okay? And what happens after that is if they don't get the help they need, they grow up, and then it turns also into adulthood abuse. A lot of times they're abusive to their families, all this other stuff. So, but tonight we're going to talk about the events, okay, that these two gals have going on. It's coming up soon, from what I understand. We have Darlene, of course. She's one of our NASCA girls. And we have also Victoria, who's one of our NASCA girls. And they both have two events. No, I'm sorry. They both have an event each. And then also, too, we have Cindy here. I think she wants to just listen. So, because she's on hold now. All right, so that's fine. So, Darlene. Okay, Darlene is from Tennessee. She's a NASCA family member. She's a survivor of severe child abuse and author of Born in a Living Hell. And she was born in a living hell. A lot of us are born in a living hell. But she was born in a living hell, all right, about the torturous childhood, and has recently written a second book called Shattered Innocence. But Darlene isn't here tonight to tell her story because she's done that several times. And she is here tonight to lead a discussion on two topics. This is the bio that's been read or been written. Events we want to publicize at the end of October 1st, a child trafficking marathon, and number two, an event highlights the trauma experienced by children who grow up in domestic violent homes. And then also, too, I'm not going to read any more because that's all going to come out as she's speaking, but we also have Victoria here, okay? And Victoria has an event, evidently, that's coming up, and I want her to be able to discuss her event first. Now, toss a nickel. I'll toss a nickel, and we'll see who goes first. Okay, cool. Darlene?
Yes, I'm supposed to start talking about it, then we'll be in a discussion and stuff. See, today I watched a video at YouTube, and you can find the video, The Effects of Exposure to Domestic Violence on Babies and Children, and there's a lot of little insight, the impact on children, first impressions, and there's the first part where under first impressions, this lady, she's a PhD, MPH, founding director of Alaska Family Prevention Project, was able to ride along with police to domestic violence situations. The first call she ever rode along was at dinner time. Spaghetti was dripping down the walls. The kitchen table was overturned. They believe the three children there was no evidence that the children were physically harmed. The children are fine, they thought. They learned differently. Child one was a boy. He had classic behavior. He had chronic exposure to violence. He would completely zone out, numb out, and as things began to get scary. Now, the six-year-old girl blamed herself for what's going on. And then the most hard person of all was a six-month-old baby. Had the most profound or severe harm from the situation. 4 years later, he seriously injured another child in preschool from what the behavior that he had seen. Children in homes with domestic violence, threats, and even arguments end up physically, emotionally, and intellectually damaged. Children's brains are damaged by stress and anxiety. As I went and watched some of these videos, I learned more because how the brain starts from infancy, the baby's brains are like a sponge. They start getting the information that's around. And then it's like a lot of times, too, if you neglect a child, then all of a sudden the children's going to learn not to depend on whatever, to turn their attention, and then, of course, doing other kind of behavior because they're not being paid attention to. They try different things. But if you go ahead and give the kid back the positive reinforcement, the child, the baby, its brain could heal easier and faster. But unfortunately, this little kid, this little baby, had soaked it up, you know, about the violence that was going around. And so no matter what was done, it took 4 years to find out that this 4.5-year-old now had the worst damage. And we think that children are so resilient. That shows us that the brain at that age, when at infancy, this child, see, that's the base for the brain supposed to be learning and growing. So the baby's brain was in stress and trauma. And this child has never got to heal for this traumatic situation that he was born in. Mm-hmm. What do you say about that, Victoria?
Sorry, I had to get off mute.
Okay.
What do I say about that? Well, I was sexually abused from the day after I was born when I came home from the hospital by my sperm donor, as I call him. And I can tell you I developed multiple personality disorder from it. And I found out that from abuse as a child, any kind of abuse as a child, there's many different kinds, as Carol mentioned, but then there's also spiritual, religious, there's just so many different types of abuse. And anyway, you know, in NASCA, we don't compare who's there better or worse. All abuse of children is wrong, bad, and causes damage. And they've done studies that the brain changes when there's abuse. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, a lot of people, at least I didn't know that, and, you know, I'm a survivor myself, but when I found that out, it really made a difference. But the thing is that, like, you know, there is intervention, and there's also what I did, which is kind of reparenting myself and changing. You can change that brain functioning. I mean, it's never going to get back. Darlene gave me a while back the difference between PTSD and complex PTSD. And people that have ongoing trauma have complex PTSD. And the PTSD is you have a sense of threat, avoidance, and you re-experience the events. Okay, so complex PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder, is interpersonal disturbances, negative self-concept, affective dysregulation, sense of threat, avoidance, and re-experiencing. So there's more that goes on than, you know, just what people know as PTSD. They just, you know, I don't think they've added it, whatever that DSM, whatever number they're on, I don't know. but more therapists are recognizing it, and more therapists are getting aware of trauma-based therapy. And I suggest to people, if you're a survivor of child abuse or domestic violence or whatever, that you get somebody that's trauma-informed. It's kind of a new topic, but a lot of people don't know that when, you know, they just think they're going in and getting interviewed by a therapist, psychologist, psychiatrist, whatever. But, you know, you are the consumer. You have a right to go in and ask questions of them. And if they get offended,
right.
probably not somebody you want to see. You know,
let me tell you something.
Okay. Yeah.
I want to say something.
Sure.
There are new things out there now. Remember, when I worked in Greystone, they were still doing. They had stopped doing shock treatment by the time I got there, in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have. Although I did have friends that had shock treatment, and they actually liked it. I know that's weird, but anyway, that's okay.
I had
that's
shock
done, that's
treatment. I didn't like it.
Well, I'm sure. I can't picture this, all right? But they really thought that it was helpful. Now they have today they do have something that is, you put a band around your head, okay, and it sends impulses to the brain, to the part of the brain that they've decided has been damaged, okay, by child abuse. Because you see, yes, when this is from the Journal of Psychology, there is anxiety, depression, eating disorders, panic disorder, substance abuse, and schizophrenia. I didn't know that until just recently. I went over more notes and I did some more, you know, looking in other books and so forth and online. But schizophrenia, now they're saying that too can be a part of child abuse, especially if it's severe. And then the antisocial personality disorder also comes in there. And sleep disturbances, and that's where the self-harm comes in. And then also suicidal behavior, which unfortunately too many of us at NASCA know about, okay? So you see, they're doing all kinds of studies. They're learning things now. And if people do look under, I'm just going to, you know, read off this one thing because I want people to look for themselves. Referral, let's see, which one? Oh, my God, I've got so much stuff here. Well, anyway, it's under, you have to look under the lasting mental health impacts of childhood sexual trauma, and that's from the AMEN. I do mean AMEN clinics. And it gives you all this kind of information. So it's something, though, that I didn't know that schizophrenic people, you know, had always come from or almost always from dysfunctional homes, okay? I was a technician there at Greystone, psychiatric and certified through the state. But I still had things to learn then, and I still have things to learn now because, you see, the DSM, as you're referring to, it does give out more and more information, because they constantly are working to try and help people like us who have been, you know, horribly abused as children, and we have our issues, okay? So I'm glad they're working on it, and I hope they find some answers. That's all I had to say. So
exactly. May I ask you a question?
Because, sure.
Carol?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I know, since we're getting on the topic of domestic violence, I know that in your book that you talked about how you went and seen your father beating your mother and you wanted to go help her. Can you discuss that a little bit on how its impact to you made you feel as that little girl? Tell people the story, please, behind that.
Sure, no problem. Okay. First of all, I was scared to death of my father. He looked like a monster. And he had this maniacal look on his face when he was hitting my mother. And from what I understand, he weighed about 240. My mother weighed 95 pounds. I'm 5 years old. What do I weigh? I don't even know. Okay. So I would wait for him, and this I always felt guilty about, but I'm just a kid. I would wait for him to finish. Disgusting. And he didn't know that I was hiding on the stairwell and crouched way down because the hallway was always black. It was dark, you know, that he wouldn't see me. And that was till the very end when something else happened. But I remember being so frightened, so horribly frightened, that I was really like stone. I was stone. You know, they talk about flight, okay? I couldn't flee or I couldn't run. I was like stone. And then when he got out of the house, I would take some deep breaths. I remember doing that, and I would go into the kitchen because my mother was always crouched down or fallen down or something over in the corner of the kitchen, and of course there was blood all over the place. So I would take a rag, anything I could find, and wipe her face off. I'm just a little kid. I didn't know what to do, you know, and wipe her face off. And many times she'd say, oh, I fell down the steps. You see, this is what women used to do. We don't have to do this anymore. I fell down the steps. I'm so clumsy. You know, all these other things, all these excuses, because people would ask. They would ask, you know, what are these bruises? What is that a cut over there I see? You know, things, all these things. And one time he broke a nose. Oh, I walked into the wall. That's what people did. And because in those days especially, we're getting better now, Darlene, but in those days especially, it was so evil and it was so hidden. It was something to be so terribly ashamed of, and it's always evil, all right? But it's something to be terribly ashamed of that you didn't even want the neighbors to know. So people kept their mouths shut. Today you don't have to. Now, I felt like a stone until that man got out of the house. And I've said 3 or 4 times, Ancestry says he wasn't my father, and you know something, thank God. I'm Italian, I have Swiss in me too, and he doesn't have any of that in him, nor she. So anyway, the point is children get so frightened that either they're able to run or they're not able to run, and they just stand there and they don't know what to do, and they shake. I mean, I remember shaking horribly because I was terribly, terribly, terribly frightened. So that's just a little part of that one scene, but I won't get into that because I know Bill's going to want me to tell my story again soon. I know he is.
Yes, but this was an important part of the thing that Victoria is having the event about, so it was important to touch base on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm glad I could help.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
They also
say that, you know, even though a child may not be around during the initial domestic to witness it,
mm-hmm.
they still see the aftermath. They see the destroyed furniture. They see the holes in the wall. They see the bruises and broken bones on the person that it was affected. They end
mm-hmm.
up with anxiety. They end up going, reverting back to times when their thumbs suck, when they start wetting the bed, when they get... they cry and they whine, you know, when they observe that.
They regress.
And
yeah, they go.
Start
they regress.
Find,
mm-hmm.
And then there's post-traumatic stress disorder that they end up having also. And then there's the trauma. It's enough to cause dangerous changes in the developing brains of the children. They cause
exactly.
nightmares, changes in your sleep patterns, your anger, irritability. Difficulty
mm-hmm.
concentrating, and children may sometimes have the ability to reenact aspects of the traumatized and abused observed, because that's one way that they can't get it out of their mind, so they kind of role play, and sometimes that's how therapists use mm-hmm. a doll or something, say, show us what happened.
Right,
and
exactly.
sometimes they don't even have to say, show us what happened. Instead, the cat just naturally shows the anger episodes when it's right there playing, and they just observe them while they're playing. But, you know, when there's physical changes for the school-age children, it's a higher risk of experiencing physical injury following the constant stream of abuse, and they end up having stomach aches, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They might dabble in drugs or alcohol. They might fight, skip school, engage
mm-hmm.
in risky sexual activities.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
They're likely to get in trouble with the law as well. And
that's
then
right.
An abusive partner can very easily become an abusive parent or guardian, physically, verbally, and emotionally harming their children. So,
you see,
know, the
that's what I was
effect,
talking about. There's a pattern there,
yeah.
Darlene. See, if kids don't get the help,
yes.
And you know what also, too, and I know I did this. I'm sure everybody does it who witnesses it, all right? The ones that actually do witness, they're always afraid they're going to be next. I mean, maybe daddy's all of a sudden. It doesn't always have to be daddy either. Remember that. It can be mommy, too, because I lived across the street in Red Bank from that. I well remember. I was an adult, and I, whoa, check this out. But 95%, I think, maybe it's 98%. I hate to tell you this, guys. Yeah, it is. It is usually, you know, the men that abuse the wives, and then at times, at one time, and it may have risen because of the COVID and all the things we're going through now in our country, the domestic violence rate has gone sky high. And so children are at risk too because, you know, they get in the way or maybe they try to, they don't hide, okay? Maybe they try to stop daddy and then they get hit. So What they're finding in ER rooms now with the kids that are going in, they have brain injuries, yes, because they get hit in the head. I mean, so
exactly.
Often we know the kids get, you know, hit in the head. So that's mostly what you see going to the emergency room. It's also very, very,
right.
very sad. It's so sad. All right, so go ahead, darling.
And then it also talks about, you know, what ends up happening in the future when they become adults. If they got
mm-hmm.
health problems such as, you know, like if they tried medical personnel or doctors try to say, oh, it's a poor diet or environmental risk. But, see, that may not be the primary cause of conditions like heart disease, obesity, and diabetes in adulthood. It stemmed back from the trauma of seeing this happen. Of seeing the abuse or being abused, you know, because you are being abused as well, even if you haven't been physically abused. I'm saying even
mm-hmm.
if you have not been physically abused, if you were just in that household where violence was.
Right.
Okay. Depression, the anxious child raised in a toxic, abusive environment may grow to become depressed. Which we already know that's true, basically. That's why a lot of times we turn to alcohol or drugs. That didn't work for me, so, I mean, I tried alcohol, and I couldn't get drunk enough to forget, you know, so I was so mad, you know, because nothing would work.
I know.
Routinely witnessing domestic violence places children at high risk of developing depression, sadness,
mm-hmm.
concentration issues, and other symptoms of depression into adulthood. Y'all, I want to ask y'all a question, okay?
Mm-hmm.
How many times have we really blamed ourselves over the things that have happened in the past? Like, if I would have been a better child, this wouldn't have happened. I'm the main reason this happened. You know, we as children blamed ourselves.
Okay, I have to say something to that, okay? I'm not one of them.
Well, I did.
Well, most do. You're right. I don't know what was wrong with me. I'm different. Yeah, we all know this.
It's a good thing that you were different, you know.
Well, yeah, I was different, absolutely. I mean, I always knew that it was wrong, but I just didn't know what to do about it because I was a kid. So I didn't know. I mean, look, I'm standing out in the street, and this little girl walks over to me, one of my friends, and she says, "Why does your daddy drink so much? Why does he have such a big mouth?" And I remember looking at her, and yeah, I remember looking at her and saying to her, "I don't know. I'm just a kid." I used to use that all the time. "I don't know. I'm just a kid." Because I didn't know. All right. But
exactly.
I knew somehow that I wasn't to blame because, look, I'm a kid. They're adults. They're fighting. And it's just like if two kids, say in school, they get into a fight, it's not the teacher's fault or another adult's fault. It's not the janitor's fault. It's the kids. They're fighting for a reason, so they think. All right. So that's the way that I looked at things was, you know, I know I didn't do this. They're doing it. So that's why I'm different.
Yeah, I get a question a lot of times. How could your dad do such things to you? I said, I have no idea. You know, I spent years trying to figure out why he did what he did. And you know what? Got me nowhere. I finally decided I'm going to look at what he did to me, what happened to me, and how can I get better. But I had to identify what happened. And I had to, you know, remember through flashbacks and nightmares and body memories and dissociation and lots of therapy, lots of, especially talking to other survivors. And that's, I guess, why I like NASCA, because I was not talking about my child abuse because I didn't escape from my biological father until I was 21 with a six-month-old child. And I had so much shame about that. Go back to what Darlene said. You know, and I didn't have an out, and a lot of people think adults have an out. You know, any kind of domestic violence situation where there are two adults in a relationship that there's abuse present, you know, domestic violence present, then you know, it doesn't matter the relationship. You know, we've stopped defining that. And as far as, you know, we don't have to keep secrets anymore. There are people still need to keep secrets depending on what kind of situation you're in. There's a lot of people that are trapped, and that's why we don't say, I left the abuse. We say, we escaped from the abuse. And we don't say they committed suicide. We say they died of suicide. We need new terminology. I don't say, I'm a multiple, or, you know, I have multiple personality disorder, or, you know, I am bipolar, but I'm not. I have been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, you know. I have many other things that I am. I'm a mother, I'm a daughter, I'm a pet owner, I'm a writer, I'm an artist, you know. I talk like crazy. You know, I mean, there's all these
You're
things.
You're like,
I know, but just to say that person is schizophrenic or that person, you know, is a bipolar person or something like that. We are not our disorders. And I just want to say something about regret, because I have 36 years sober from drugs and alcohol. All I have is this moment, because I don't know what's going to happen the next. But anyway,
congratulations.
But what I want to say is that, you know, when I talk in groups, I talk about regrets, because it seems that comes up a lot. And I always say, you know, we only made the decisions we did with the information we had at the time. And I got bad information and outright lied to. You know, so how can I make any other decisions? And we're not the only one that have regrets. Just about everybody in the world has a regret about something in their past. But
of course,
for me, it turned into self-hate, self-harm. I was cutting on myself because it was the only way I could relieve the anxiety and the memories and the pain, and it seemed to work for a while. But I tell you what, it's not the solution. You know, the solution is looking at what happened. I would like to talk about my event, because it is coming up on the 29th. And it's going to be in Minneapolis, Minnesota, at The Square is what it's called. And most people know about George Floyd. And they have a two-block area circumference that they don't have any traffic coming through or anything. It's called George Floyd Square. And they have a building there that they opened up in April, and it's called The Square, and it's a huge building. It's got a huge front area, small middle area, and a huge back area that that we were able to secure for the event. So it's going to be inside, and then after the event, at 5 o'clock, we're going to do candlelight vigil outside. Okay, so we got our agenda is pretty much kind of set up. We're going to have opening comments, and then I'm going to either quickly tell a short story, but I'm going to hopefully write something instead so that it kind of, you know, gets, more, you know, more to get, you know, quickly, you know, quicker. Let me tell my story. Okay, and then we're going to have Minnesota Missing Children, the Twin Cities Men's Center, who has a anger support group for men. We're going to have Crisis Nursery, which if you're in a crisis in Minneapolis or in Coney, you can call them up. You can bring your kids in no matter how they are. Bring them in, and they'll take care of them for 2 or 3 days, depending on how much time you need for a break. And I used them when my kids were young. And I tell you what, just because they were there for me, it gave me permission to ask for help from other resources, you know. And then we're having Bill Murray's going to be on the agenda. And we're working on getting a better women's shelter. We're getting a parent support group because we're not just doing it. October, for those who don't know, is Domestic Violence Awareness and Prevention Month. And because I'm the Minnesota ambassador at NASCA, I wanted to do a focus on not only domestic violence, but on the effects on children who observe domestic violence. And it don't just have to be in the home. It could say, you know, they go over, like you said, a friend's house, or they go over to, say, aunt and uncle for, you know, the weekend or the summer, or, you know, or just observing it, knowing in the neighborhood, like you say, well, I heard, you know, them screaming and yelling in the neighborhood. How is this affecting our kids? You know, and so I not only want that, but I want awareness of the issues, but then I want the prevention part of it too, and intervention. So we're also talking, I'm going to have a parent, hopefully a parent, maybe the group, come out and talk about positive parenting, nurturing parenting, because that isn't usually talked about, you know. And I've got a father's support group I'm trying to get a hold of, and hopefully get a speaker from there to talk about how it is to be a positive parent, you know. And we're going to have an open mic that's going to start at 4:30. And Amy Anna is my co-coordinator, and she's in California. So to do it and have Bill, who's in California, and Amy Anna and a couple other people, we are also going to do it on Zoom, and we're going to try to get something to do on Facebook. So it's going to be on the 29th from 1 to 5, but in addition to the Candlelight Vigil. Now I've contacted the newspapers, radio stations, TV, a whole bunch of resources in the area, and asked them to come and set up tables. We got 25 tables that people can set up their resources on. Bill is going to send me information from NASCA to set up. I've got all other organizations that are either sending me literature or bringing literature and going to set at the table. We got buttons and bumper stickers for sale. The ones that we've got are Domestic Violence Hurts Children Too. They have a blue. We have a blue ribbon for child abuse awareness. That's the color. And we have purple ribbon on it for domestic violence awareness. That's the color for that. And I do is I tie ribbons that are blue, black, and purple. And, of course, I just described the blue and the purple. But the black is for those that died either at the hands of their abusers as a result of their abuse. Either died of suicide, of some kind of a physical, whatever came out of that abuse, you know. And we don't even have statistics on all this, you know. So we can't even point statistics to all the people that have died as a result of child abuse. And I want to say that my mom sent me and my two brothers on my first birthday to Minnesota because the only fact was I felt we were in danger, okay? And I got to tell her before she died, you know, she kept saying she was a bad mom because she gave up her kids. I said, actually, you were a good mother because you went with your motherly instincts and you got your kids to safety, you know? She was a victim of domestic violence, and she was getting beat all the time. And she went to her dad and told her, and her dad said, my grandfather who raised me, said, well, you made your bed, now lie in it. And that is what she felt she had to do. There were no better women's shelters, she said. She could not get away, beat her all the time, unconsciously all the time, and bruises all the time. And the only time she got to go to the hospital, we beat her so bad, her eye was hanging out of her head. And so he brought her in, and she did say that she fell and hit the corner of the cupboard, you know. And so, yeah. And as far as people not being able to tell what's going on, they still can't. There's many people. But what's good about the hospitals now, they don't, you know, like my dad would have brought her into the hospital, right? And I'm sure he would have stood right there like she's going to say, yeah, this guy beat me, you know. But now what they do is they separate whoever brings you in, they separate you and they ask you the question, are you safe? Are
right.
you safe?
Right.
You know, yeah. and that is just such a open door for people to get help, you know. And we're realizing that it's not just, you know, certain people or certain financial situations or first personal demographics or whatever. You know, there's so many different things that people, you know, get an idea this happens in these kinds of families or this kind of whatever. This is not true. This is not true. And, you know, we just need to start breaking some of these myths, you know. But the shame, you know, the shame can come in many ways. For instance, my grandmother, when I was 4 years old, my grandparents raised me. When I was 4 years old, my grandmother would get drunk with my grandfather on weekends. You know, of course, they weren't alcoholics, they said, because they only drank on weekends. So anyway, she was so drunk and she was so mad and so upset. She went out, she was going to go out on the road to kill herself, to get hit by a car. That's what she said.
Oh, God.
I told myself to get hit by a car. She went out on the road. At 4 years old, I went out there and brought her back in the house. I mean, a four-year-old should never be put in that situation. Four-year-old
no.
should not feel that they have to save a parent, you know.
That's right.
And I want to make sure that we're also identifying, because this has been happening now. Okay, so somebody finds out you're in a domestic abuse situation, and say you go to shelter and you make a decision to go back, you could lose your kids, okay? They could take them away and sometimes even give them to the abuser. And then there's parental alienation. We're going to be talking about that out there, you know, because that's a big issue. There's so many components to that. And, you know, it's a really scary thing. When I started working with the Battered Women's Shelter in 86, the big thing they said is we do not tell people what to do. Because if we tell people what to do, you have to leave your abuser, you have to this, you have to that, we take away their choices. And you know what? The abuser took away their choices. You know, abusive parents take away children's choices. And so we got to be able to not tell people what they should or shouldn't do. We need to let people make their own decisions. Everybody makes mistakes, you know, and everybody has successes. And we don't get to tell everybody what they should or shouldn't do, you know. And the other part with the journey of recovery, we all have our own road. Some, what might work for me, you know, might now work for Darlene, might now work for Carol, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We all have our own pathways. But the point is that I never listened to my inner voice. I knew I was afraid of my biological father, but I never knew why. But my body knew. But I ignored those red flags because I couldn't remember why I was afraid of him. That's how he kept coming back into my life.
Right.
You know? And
right.
he almost killed me, and he wanted to marry me and take me to Louisiana and raise my daughter as her child. I also want to make sure that people know. So, you know, if we do talk about domestic violence, we need to make sure we're putting the blame back on the abuser. When we talk about domestic violence in children, that the blame gets passed back on the abuser, not on the victim, that they did not get the children out of that situation. We've got to be very careful that we are not blaming the victim in any of this. That is my utmost priority at this event.
Can you tell us how also to get in touch with you so that they can go to the events as well?
People can email me at Oz, which is stands for A Helping Hand for Healing Souls, which is the grassroots organization, which is my grassroots organization I founded about 15 years ago. And it's not a 501(c), but we're having a so they can email me at it's Oz, but it's AHHHS. number1@outlook.com. Now, if you also want to be part of the Zoom event, you need to email me so I can send you the link. I'm also on Facebook, Victoria Kelly, and you can look. I don't know if it's going to be on this show or not, but we are coming back on the 26th, Amy Anna Soto and myself, to talk about more about the event. We're also going to have a clothesline up there. And it's going to be messages about domestic violence and how domestic violence affects children. And I'm going to have a whole bunch of blank T-shirts. and a whole bunch of fabric markers out there, and markers and paints, where people can write messages or create messages or images or whatever they want to do and hang them up on a clothesline out there. And so we've got a lot going on. We're going to have a silent auction. Like I said, there's going to be tons of resources out there. I got three different people that are vendors that are coming out. I'm giving them free tables, and they make like candles and have sage and jewelry, and one's an
jewelry.
Artist, and
I'm
one's
coming.
Like T-shirts.
Wow.
I mean, it's a lot going on. Like I said, I've contacted all the media, contacted some colleges, and the professors sound like they're going to be able to give extra credit to the students that come out and help. And it's
that's
just
what they do.
Coming
that's
together,
good
I feel like the universe is raining down on me, and I am just
Okay, hold on, everybody. Everybody's got to stop for a second.
Hey,
because I don't want to. Yeah, right, Aaron. I don't want to ignore you, but there's a lot of talking going on here. So I just want you to know that I see you. So you have to speak to. Darlene, can you speak to her after the show, or do you want to ask her a question or make a comment?
Oh, I had a question. I had a question for her for the show. But yeah,
okay.
I can just
talk
to her about it later.
But go ahead. Go ahead. If it's concerning the show, go ahead.
I think he just dropped off. Okay. See, he was sitting down there, and I was getting nervous because I wanted to get him on. But he wants to talk to you about the show or something? Is that what he just said?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. Darlene, hold on a second, honey. I think what he said also, too, is he'll talk to you after the show. I just want you to know that. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I know also... Last year when you, or the other year that you did the clothesline project, you also took people riding on the different clothing, like this year it's T-shirts. Could they write something and then send it in to you or send it in somewhere where they're able to?
Yeah.
If they cannot
I'm trying
get there
to find
a
P.O. box, but go ahead when you guys discuss, and I'll try and find that P.O. box and make sure I give it before the end of the show.
All right.
Okay.
Now, we do have Cindy also. She's been hanging out here, and I see her hand is raised, so she wants to make a comment or ask a question. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Hi, everybody. I've been listening. Thank you. I was going to ask Darlene. I was looking at the rescue trafficking telethon. And do you know exactly where the funds go that are raised, like what organizations they're working with?
Yes, I do. Well, I know part of it and everything, but I'm fixing to get in that. Would that be okay if I start discussing that, Carol?
Yeah, you can talk about whatever you want. Go ahead.
Okay, first I want to discuss about how human trafficking is defined, and you can find that information at justice.gov. Human trafficking is a crime involving the exploitation of a person for labor, services, or commercial sex. The Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000 and its subsequent reauthorizations recognize and define two primary forms of human trafficking. Number one, sex trafficking is the recruitment, harboring, transportation, provision, obtaining, patronizing, or soliciting of a person for the purpose of a commercial sex act in which a commercial sex act is induced by force, fraud, or coercion, or in which the person induced to perform such act has not attained 18 years of age. Number two, forced labor is the recruitment, harboring, transportation, provision, or attaining of a person for labor or services throughout the use of force, fraud, or coercion for the purpose of subjection to involuntary servitude, peonage, debt bondage, or slavery. So that is the legal definition of that. And I want to talk a little bit about the human trafficking website that she is talking about. It's at traffickingrescue.org. They will be having a telethon later on this month. I'll get into that. They are a partner with Qualified 501c3 that take the survivors and provide therapy and assistance in becoming a productive citizen once again. Your donation means freedom for these survivors, helping stop trafficking, helping support victims, generating public education, and education for youth. And I got news today about that, but I want to go ahead and talk about who the speakers will be if y'all are interested in that. Then I'll go to her question because it's on a separate page than this. So,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, go ahead.
Speakers, one of them is going to be Marcus Miller. He had been on NASCAR's show himself. He's written about 10 different books, if I am not mistaken. He is an author and a survivor. Elaine Uridic, she's been on NASCAR as well. She's an advocate and a survivor. Tanisha Bankston is also a NASCAR person. Richard Windman, he's also a NASCAR. He's a speaker, mm-hmm. activist, and an advocate. Eileen Dong, that's another one. Speaker, activist, mm-hmm. advocate. Me, of course, Darlene J. Clark. I'm a survivor and an advocate. Then there's a speaker, Mark Cooley. Speaker, Pastor Ben Graham. Speaker, Andy Ledford. And if I'm not mistaken, Andy Ledford is the guy in North Carolina that helped, that's got a trafficking rescue organization over there. And there will be a Sheriff Richie Simmons and a Sheriff Jeff Crisco, which of course I believe that they'll probably be discussing about how much it has impacted this. Okay, and the information I got that was dated for 10/13/22, this is mm-hmm. to go along with to helpfully answer part of Cindy's question. They said mm-hmm. they have formed a coalition of 7 different charities that are on the front line of rescuing young people from the slavery that they are in. 2 of these charities mm-hmm. will be building cyber units that tracks these criminals and works with police to capture them and release the victims of abuse. They are the one charity that investigates crime that backs up the first 2. The remaining 3 will be building housing projects for their survivors who are traumatized. Food, clothing, education, and health care to be provided while there. A minimum of 2 years with the purpose of helping these people to become productive citizens in our society once again. Their charity, Human Trafficking Rescue Incorporated, will be relieving these 6 charities from fundraising that takes more time than actually doing their mission that these charities are on. The idea being that we raise enough funds to support these charities full-time so they can spend 100% of their time working on their mission. More people can be rescued and more criminals captured and locked up.
Now,
I think that
sounds
answers your
wonderful.
Question.
Yes.
I think that answers her question there.
Yeah,
I think
that was very well said, yes. So anyway, yeah, so we have, excuse me, another caller. I think they just want to listen. And I'm glad, you know, I'm so proud of both of you. I really, really am. Because you see what's going on now today. There's more people who are starting to listen. And with both of you, you have such wonderful events, okay? And this is just warming my heart. Because years ago, I've been on the show 12 years, we all know this, and there was really nothing too much out there. And people were floundering around trying to form groups, get people to listen, okay, and people to care. So when you have a wonderful, and you've done a fine job, both of you, in putting these events together, so that's going to draw, it certainly should, I certainly hope so, that's going to draw a crowd of people. It's going to draw them. And then the more people are here, hopefully the more people that will care, okay? So to me, it's very, very important to have these events. I always did presentations until typhus took over. And that that's all I'm going to say. But I did run into a couple of school kids, college kids, and they said to me, Carol, please come back. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say another word. But anyway, I thought that was so funny. Oh, God. But anyway, you know, the thing of it is we do what we do with so little money. I mean, it comes out of our pockets, you know, 9 times out of 10. We're trying to put money into it. And if people want to donate to NASCA, we can have a lot more events because always remember that there is strength in numbers. So if you have people out there talking about, you know, human trafficking, and yes, there is a difference between the older people are used in fields, they're used also in motels to work and all this other stuff, and the kids are put out in the street. I mean, it's disgusting. And since all the things that we're living with, I'm going to put it that way, living with today, okay, there's so much more human trafficking that's going on. And see, these people, they make me sick because they're gathering all this money, okay? They're gathering in all the money from what the Johns and – listen, if there were no Johns, there wouldn't be pimps. There wouldn't be a need for them. See, this is something that has to be stopped somehow, some way. Think about it, all right? So you guys out there, and girls too, you know, you're helping them. You're helping the wrong people. You're helping them get rich. And the kids are being used. And a lot of times, you know, those kids, they are so mentally deranged because I've worked with kids that were put out on the street. They're so mentally deranged and they have to be deprogrammed. They have to be deprogrammed.
Well, you know, of them, too, but they're not getting education or anything either. You know, one of the things that happened with my mom is, you know, she will say, I chose stripping, but then she follows it up by, your dad wouldn't work and I had to feed 3 children. Well, to me, that's not a choice. And because he was profiting off of her income on being used in stripping, he is considered a pimp. Anybody that profits off the money that somebody makes in systems of prostitution or sexual slavery, as it's also called, is a pimp, whether we want to call them that or not. They are making my biological father was a pimp because he knew what my mom was doing, and he lived off that money. You know, he might not have said go out and do it, but she also said, I had to feed my kids, you know. And anyway, I also want to say I'm a survivor of systems of prostitution. My mother was in stripping, which affected me because when she was out doing that, my biological father was, quote, babysitting me and my 2 brothers. And during that time was sexually abusing me. And so before I was a year old, and it was told to me after when I got to my grandparents, finally when I was locked up in the state mental hospital, that when I came to live with them, they took me to the doctor because I was crawling around my hands and my knees and I'd end up at the corner whimpering. And they took me to the doctor, found out that my vaginal opening was way too big for a child that age and I already had a sexual abuse. But they said, whatever you do, don't tell her. And so I finally drug it out of them when I was locked up in the state hospital. And my grandma said, the doctor said never to tell you. I said, why not? And she said, because he said it would never affect you unless you knew. I said, well, it's affecting me. I'm locked up in the state hospital. I'll probably never get out of it. You know, at least you can tell me. Maybe I can get help, you know. And she finally did. But I was like pulling teeth, getting it out of her. You know, but then that's when I started getting help. Or what happened to me, and I don't know how long I was in there, but it felt like an eternity. But you know, but I was revolving door psych wards, and I'm not ashamed of it because I tell you what, that's where I got my help. You know,
that's right.
I did get a
lot
of help.
You make a good point. Let's stop right there for a second. There's so many people. Yeah, there's so many people that don't want to, let's just say, like come on this show because they're ashamed. Now, that's changing. More men are coming on. You're noticing that, right? And over the last few years especially. And they're coming on because they're realizing that more men are coming on or guys are coming on, and they're telling their story, and they feel better. And then, you know, maybe they'll go and get the help. Yeah, they're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe they'll go get the help that they need. You know what I'm saying? And look, there's no shame in that. We're not to blame for what happened to us as children.
No.
Absolutely not.
I also want to mention some people get confused with guilt and blame. And
mm-hmm.
guilt is something like that you did wrong. Like, you know, you went to the
right.
store and shoplifted. Okay, so that's guilt. Shame is
mm-hmm.
you are wrong. There's, see that difference? You
yeah.
are wrong.
Yeah.
And the thing is,
yeah.
is usually shame is guilt of somebody else being put on a victim.
Mm-hmm.
The guilt of somebody else. So instead of the shame, I put the guilt back on the abuser. And that's
absolutely.
What we need to start doing. We stop blaming the victim for the effects of the abuse and put the abuse back on the abuser.
And then another thing,
you agree?
Too. Yes,
mm-hmm.
I do. And another thing, mm-hmm. too, now look, there's people out there, you know, who can forgive, and God bless them, okay? I get hit with
mm-hmm.
this all the time. This
mm-hmm.
is why I'm bringing it up to you guys, all right? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're so, you know, blown away. They're so blown away because of what's happened. And they can't forgive the persons or persons. In my case, there's many people. Don't forget I was in a pedophile house, right? All right, whatever. So the point of it is this. It wasn't our fault, okay? Number one, we didn't do anything wrong. It all happened to us. That's number one. And number two, to go and get help, okay? And that usually happens. Now, that can happen at all different ages. If a child is, you know, being sexually abused physically, mentally, emotionally, as we always talk about, and maybe I should have read the mission statement tonight. I wasn't thinking. But, you know, it's like we do it every night anyway. So, all right. And I know there's two people here tonight, so I wanted to give you your turns. So I didn't want to take up time because then I can get heavy into that too. You know how I am. So anyway, the point is this. You know, when you go and get help, that's a step in the right direction. And
mm-hmm.
you're going to feel so much better. And there's nothing wrong with doctor shopping. I always want to tell people, I'm not talking about pill popping. I'm talking about, you know, going to a psychologist or a therapist, whomever you want to choose, a counselor. Many of us are counselors on the show. Now, listen here. You are going to feel so much better once you get through your healing journey. And everyone has a different amount of time that it takes. I do know this. You have PTSD, and yes, you do have complex PTSD, okay, SD. And when you have complex, which I was diagnosed with, along with clinical depression, okay, I think I might do a show on depression one night. And then bring in, you know, things of what causes that. Clinical depression is something that is caused terribly from terrible trauma, and you become terribly depressed, and it can be a lot of different things. And I want to make mention, too, of the fact, because one of you two were speaking, you were Darlene, and it had to do with the service. I do mention this at times, and I want people to truly understand this. A child who witnesses, okay, domestic violence, and certainly a child who ends up getting hit because of domestic violence in the family, either or, it's trauma. And it's the same amount. Now, studies have been done, and I have all the information on it. Studies have been done, and the studies have come up that with a child who goes through that day after day after day, complex PTSD is because it is day after day after day after day, okay? There's a difference of the two. Now, but a child who witnesses that all the time, they're in the same state of mind, and their part of their brain gets damaged just like a soldier who is standing in the front line who sees his buddy get his head blown off. Now, that's what the studies show. Now, I want you to think about that. Remember, we're children. We're supposed to look up to our parents. We're supposed to love them. We do love them until finally we lose that love. That's what happened to me. But, you know, for a while there, we do love them. And, you know, I loved my mother. I thought I loved my father. I was scared of him, scared to death of him with good reason, but I had, this is my daddy. This is my daddy, right? And, but then you have to realize that mommy and daddy are screwed up too. They're so screwed up. And that happens later on down the line. But that panic that you're feeling, now with me, I turned into stone, like I said, until he was gone. He'd leave the house. It's the same as the poor soldier, too, who was standing there witnessing this, you know, witnessing war. A lot of the kids, they were kids, for God's sake, like during the Vietnam time. They were drafted. They're 18 years old and up. I know what I was like when I was 18. I don't want to talk about it. All right? You know, it's just that they're not grown up at the age of 18. So 17, and the next day is your birthday, you're 18, and all of a sudden you're adult? I don't think so. And you see the psychiatrists and the people from the DSM, they know, too, today, that the brain takes much longer to function properly and also to come together and to be whole. Now, I heard on TV last night, now they're saying 21. For a long time, they were saying 25. Make up your mind. But the point is, it's not 18, and it's not 5,
right.
It's not 7, okay? So understand that when you guys are talking about even just witnessing it, it's the same thing as that.
Yes.
And that's why you have all of the anxiety, depression, you know, the eating disorders, the PTSD, the panic attacks, the substance abuse, the schizophrenia, DID, which is the same as multiple personality disorders, antisocial personality.
No, it's not the same. It's not the same.
It's the same, honey. It's the same.
No, it is not.
Yes, it is.
Okay,
who am I
I'm
speaking
done.
To? Okay. So, yeah, you bet. But anyway, so the point is this, when all the psychiatrists come up with all of that, okay, and that's where we get our information from, okay, we do go through all of that stuff. We absolutely do. I had panic disorder. I'm not saying that people have to have all of those, but certainly some of them. So, you see, you have to understand that. So, anyway, okay, I've said my spiel.
Can I get back to talking a little bit more about the rescue concert?
You certainly can. Go ahead.
Okay. With the telethon, it's going to be two separate days. There's on Saturday, October the 29th, I believe that's the Saturday. Yeah, October 29th, the Saturday, there will be a rescue concert. Well, you could go at traffickingrescue.org and you see the facts about it. And then October 30th will be music and entertainment for a good cause. And the list of entertainments, well, first I need to tell you where their location is. That's in Albemarle, North Carolina. The telethon will be hosted then at the Stanley County Agri-Civic Center. You can go and purchase tickets, or you can sponsor, and I'll be there by a video sharing my story, and there will be some of the people that I spoke of who would actually be there in person. Richard Winman's going to be there in person. Elaine Don will be there in person. Marcus Miller's going to be there in person as well. Some of the talents are going to be there. The featured artist, Angie Marie, she's a country music of yesterday. When she was a teenager, when her first love for country music first surfaced, and it also when she got to first meet and even sang a tune with one of country music's forever legends, Conway Twitty. She said that Conway Twitty gave her first fatherly advice. It was the same thing he said he told his daughter, Kathy, education first, then music. As she got older, she went on to perform top 40 band called the Rusty Evans Band in South Florida. Then later in life, while still in Florida, she went to work in 6 major films, including Ace Ventura, Pet Detectives. She said it was a lot of fun working with film in a film with Jim Carrey. I can imagine so. I'd probably be laughing my butt off so much. He's such a comedian.
Well,
you
know, oh, yeah, I've heard of him.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And another, the fiddler and the flutist.
Uh-huh.
And they're out of Monroe, North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
Brian Keith and the Mile High Band, Jenna Poole Band,
uh-huh.
Trisha Ann Band, Tribe Called Praise,
uh-huh.
a comedian named Kennedy Robertson, a comedian,
uh-huh.
comedian named Glenn Yost, Personal Bell will be with music, and there's going to be a magic man called Jamie Petrush. And also
uh-huh.
two other acts that will be there is the the most famous Elvis impersonator, number one Elvis impersonator is going to be there. So he's
uh-huh.
going to be like Elvis the Pelvis, as you could say.
Does he look like Elvis? I want to know if he looks like Elvis.
I guess they got to look like him when they impersonate him. You know, they're dressed like him and everything, you know. So I hope he don't start throwing off the scarf and I look, hug, hug, burn, and look. And then
I think that'd be funny.
And also
look,
the
you have to have
Patsy
humor.
Impersonator. Right.
Let me tell you, you have to have humor. Go ahead.
And also there's going to be a Patsy Cline impersonator.
Oh.
So a lot of people that love country music would love to mm-hmm. go here, I am sure. And if you want to look up artist Angie Marie, she's a country music star, so you might want to look her up. Then you'll see who we're speaking of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what's going to be in that line of events. We've got a lot of people who's basically going to be there supporting as well. There's going to be officers and different rescue agencies that's out there to learn more, which is a
mm-hmm.
plus, because the more we learn, the better off we become, as long as
right.
we start applying the knowledge we know and not turning
that's
our
right.
backs on this taboo that a lot of people speak about.
It's so, you know what, it's so important. It's so important that we share what we know. It absolutely is, because this is how people learn, you know, Darlene. You know, and it doesn't matter. Like, I don't care if people have their PhDs. I don't have my PhD. Come on now. And, you know, but I was always used over at the college, and I worked with professors, and they didn't know things. They didn't know what they should know about child abuse. You know why? Because when they're doing their studies and they're taking their courses and their classes and they're, you know, they're moving up the ladder, they get so little short time about child abuse. It was something that wasn't even spoken about, you know, in the universities. So when I went into Centenary, I was there for five years, and I also, too, helped teach class because on child abuse in April, I would do that. And domestic violence, that was in October. I did that over there. So, but here's my point. We walked the walk. I don't care what they were saying even in all the books, okay? And I've been through all those books. But we walked the walk. And I don't care the most educated one, thinking they're the most educated or the professors, there were things they didn't know because they weren't taught in school, in class. In their universities that they attended, you know, wherever they went to school, they weren't taught.
Yes.
So it's up to us, because don't forget, a lot of those kids, well, they are kids to me, you know, 20 years old, that's kids to me, you know, are going to be psychologists, they're going to be, you know, work in the field of social services in one degree or another, a lot of them, and they need to know. So when we go in and we tell our stories, that's how it started out. That's how I ended up there for 5 years. You tell your story, the look of shock that comes across some of the people's faces, you know. I'm sort of like a blunt person, so I had
right.
to, like, tone myself down a little bit. So anyway, you have to gauge your audience. You just simply do. I've spoken to the police department. I didn't have to gauge my you know, what I had to say in front of them. But But they didn't have enough. They took everything back to the academy. I took back things from NASCA. They took back, rather, things from NASCA.
Yeah.
And that was very good. So, you see, we have to be the teachers. This is the way I put it, the teachers. Because, you know, they do need to learn. So regular people out on the street, the neighborhoods, the communities, I very much believe in that. If more people in the community talk about looking the other way and all this other stuff, if they would become more involved and care more, we might be able, you know, to save some kids from dying or getting pulled out of their home. That was being spoken about too, and all of this other stuff. So, you know, and then being sent back to the wrong parent and then maybe dying then, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, there's just so many things that have to be taught. And I honestly believe, I don't care if you're the best counselor in the world, okay, or the best therapist in the world, or the best psychiatrist in the world. I used to work with them, too, and they had their own shrinks. That always made me laugh. I don't know why, but it just didn't make much sense to me. But, you know, it's I learned an awful lot from them. But they learned some things from me because they didn't walk the walk. See? And that's why we're so
right.
important. That's why we're so important, you know, in this thing of child abuse and what it turns into and can turn into, you know, because we've been there and we've gone through, you know, we're not perfect. I'm not perfect. I'm never going to be 100%. I know Bill is listening. He'll like that. I always tell him I'm 95%. But anyway, you know, the point. I'm getting there. So anyway, the point is, you know, that we're good for a lot of different things. That's my point. And we are like the teachers because even the teachers, the one with their PhDs, and I don't care too much about titles because, you see, we have the experience of the actual, unfortunately, of actually going through of a lot of things they try to teach about feelings, emotional abuse, all the things that we were talking about before. By the way, what made Victoria go nuts, I think I triggered her a little bit, but I got all that information from the Journal of Psychology, and anyone can look that up. So, and then I have also the National download the National Statistics of Domestic Violence fact sheet, and that's many pages long.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you've seen it, I'm sure. So, I mean, you know, it's just things that that I know about and came across. And we need to learn more, too. So,
yes.
So, you know, when we go out, we can really educate the people, okay? So it's important. It's important.
Yes. And I want you to know, too, before I get what discuss the last parts of the human trafficking, I want to thank Bill and NASA for allowing us to come on here. And Bill has a fantastic website, the NASCO.org website, where it's got a lot of information. You can get on there, and there is worlds of just – somebody told me they'll probably be able to look at all the information one day. I said, that's impossible. That would probably take years.
Yeah, really.
Look at all the
absolutely.
Information that's available at NASCA. You know, to really delve into it, it would take a long time.
Oh, absolutely.
Time.
Let me tell you something. For 5 years, like I said, I did presentations over there. I worked with an organization called Crime Victims Unit, which was through the police department. So anyway, everything I took over there, at least 95% of it was from NASCA. Once in a while I go into Psychology Today or some of the other ones, the psychiatric whatever things that I know about and, you know, other things that I find. So, but 95% of it came from right from our website. So you see, that's why I always push the website. Last time I was on, Bill said, you said three times about the website. Like, get past that now. But I'm very proud.
Wow.
Mr. Murray, I know you're listening. I'm very proud of our I'm very proud of our website because it does have
yes,
so much. Yeah, because it does have so much information. Go ahead.
I want to talk a little bit about the guy that put this together. His name is Ronald Stockton. He started it in 2013. He owned First Fidelity of the Triad there in Lexington, North Carolina. In June of that year, he was diagnosed with cancer. That forced him into retirement. The last 7 years have been a battle, but now he's in remission, 70 years old and getting better. Now that he's able to work again, he's decided that he needs to do something to help people. He had felt for some time that he'd like to do something for children. So while Dylan was being sick, he began a study to see what he could do. He noticed that lots of kids reported as missing, but no reason why. He began to research this and found that a very disturbing thing, human trafficking, is where a lot of these kids are. He dug deeper and found that it's much bigger than he thought. 40.3 million slaves in trafficking. $53 trillion industry, if you want to call it that. He also noticed that these traffickers are bolder every day, even stealing kids out of parents' arms. Then as he dug deeper, he found some of the things these criminals are doing to these kids. I thought he had a strong constitution, but he was wrong. One film literally made him sick. And he goes on and talks about more, but I want to really elaborate on the last paragraph that he had written. He said, I must also point out that once these kids are extracted from these traffickers, they don't always get to go home. The traffickers mess with their minds to the point of making them believe that this is a normal lifestyle and they are destined to it. So they have to be placed into special homes that can work to bring these kids back to reality. We'll be supporting those homes as well. But I want to tell you a little bit about my trafficking story, which my traffickers were my own parents. So home was not the safe place for me.
No.
But they would have returned me back home to there, which a lot of times the police did. They saw the bruises and broken bones. Well, I won't say they saw the broken bones because they didn't do a scan or take me to hospital or whatever. But they saw the bruises and stuff. And they could see the fact that I had trouble walking because of being beat up. And yet the person who was there told the police, said, they're the ones that beat her up. And the police said, well, she's got custody of her, so we're sending her back home. So they did not even try to investigate the fact and get me to safety. Instead, they took me back over there, and it was my evil stepmom.
Yeah.
My daddy had done been dead. Why did they not look more into it, seeing how bruised up I was? How I couldn't barely walk. How I couldn't hardly move other parts of my body, my arms either. Why did they not care enough when they seen that this child was hurt so bad, black eyes, probably broken nose, you know, all these other bruises and stuff.
The only thing I can say to you about that, a long time ago when I was seven. I wasn't quite out of that house yet. Yes, I was. I was 7 and a half. Excuse me. Okay. The guy who was the main abuser, okay, was chasing me with his vehicle because he told me he was going to kill me if I told on him. And quite frankly, darling, I'd been there since I was 6, and I didn't care anymore, all right? A 6-year-old feeling like that. Now, I came out of my school because the second place where I lived, which was with relatives, which is where I probably should have been the first time because they were really blood relatives, okay? I have to put it that way. They treated me like I was their niece, and they were much nicer. But anyway, I was coming out of school, and it wasn't, you know, I was in the same area. So the pedophile guy, I'll put him that way, was down the street, and he started to chase me, and I don't know why. I think it was out of panic. Now, this time I could run, okay? And I was running in and out of streets. And I got into this one backyard, and it had that wire with stickies on it. What do you call it? Oh, yes.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
They use it in prisons.
I hate that chicken wire stuff. That barbed wire.
What's the name of it? Yeah, thank you. Barbed
wire.
Yes. Well, I ran into a patch of it. Okay. Yeah, thank you. I ran into a patch of it. And in this lady's backyard. I don't know what she had it doing there. It's not my business, but I ran into it. And my dress got torn. I had tears all over. My legs were bleeding quite a bit because you know what that stuff is like, all right? That's why they use it for prisons and stuff like that. And in some farming places, too, they use it so the animals can't get in to kill the chickens and stuff like that. Whatever. So the point is that I was a mess. I had lost my books. And then something told me, you know, if I go back down to Main Street, which is where the chase began, I'm the one that turned up and down the streets. And, of course, he was always on Main Street. He knew I was going to come back down, right? Or at least he figured I was. I've got to make it back to the drugstore. I'll go to the drugstore. So I went into the drugstore, and here I am. My dress is torn. I'm sure I was dirty because I was running through people's yards and falling and tripping and blood dripping down my legs, front, back, okay? Not one adult said to me, little girl, what happened to you? Instead, I got dirty looks, okay?
Exactly.
So when you say, why didn't people care? I don't know. I mean, how insensitive can an adult be to your needs,
yes,
to what you were going through, and to mine, and to a lot of all of us, right? All of us. And it's a terrible thing. Now, today, I think there's people that would respond.
Most of them, maybe not.
That's why I said some.
Yeah.
Okay. Because,
yeah.
I don't know. Go ahead.
And also the trafficking, there's two different stories I want to say right quick because I know we don't got much time. But one thing that I remembered was my mom taking me to a restaurant. And I thought, oh, good, mommy got her bonding time. Maybe my mommy loves me after all, you know, because mommy wants to spend time with me. And here I was dressed up kind of like really like a beautiful little girl, you know, and a beautiful dress and all. And these people would come up to me and say, oh, you're so cute. You want to buy her, my mom would say. Well, some of the people said yes. And she said, just bring her back alive. You do anything you want to, but just don't kill her.
Oh, my God.
And
you see,
this was done, you know, from age two. And then later on, I did not really believe a memory that I was having, but I had met this state trooper in a library in Alabama. That's where I lived at the time. I won't say what city, okay?
You don't have to. Yeah.
But I had met him up there to talk genealogy because we shared the same common last name. So we met to exchange genealogy, and before I even put my purse all the way on the table, he said, I remembered you. I said, from what? He said, from all the child porno videos. He said, my dad has over 300 child pornography videos, and you are in the majority of them. All of a sudden, my feet went out from underneath me. I was falling, and I did not want to try my best not to get hurt, you know, and my body just would not hardly work right, and I had to use my right hand as my body was falling the other direction, tried to twist myself to try to land on the chair, but I held on to the edge of the table, and I was so afraid the table was going to go on over with me, too. You know, the chair was still, you know, it's flopping, too, you know, fixing to go on over with me, and I caught myself from going on over.
It got everybody's attention in the library because it made such a commotion. You know, they saw that and they heard that and everything, but they didn't know the devastation I just heard. And since I was forced to stay right there, since I couldn't get up and walk, my body was going against me. I said, well, I know your dad's dead now, so I hope that you dispose of these pornographic things. And he said, no, his buddy his daddy's buddy had liked him, and so I gave it to him. The weird thing about this, he was an Alabama state trooper. He's supposed to serve and protect us. He's supposed to stop that kind of thing. But he was one of the perpetrators. He told me that he was 9 years old when it started. Recently, I went and looked up, you know, saw his grave thing. And no, he was actually 19. He was actually 19 years old, not 9, 19. And so, you know, that was more devastating news. But then I started remembering back after he reminded me of that. I started seeing flashes when my daddy had taken me as a little girl to the auction where these people, where this guy owned. And so they had a back room of the auction where I was being auctioned off to these men.
That's terrible. That's terrible.
And so I'm like, you know, when I remember all that and stuff like that, I really get ticked off.
That's just
no words to describe that, you know, because I'm not the only victim in that circumstances, and there's a lot more victims out there. I beg of you, please come forward and try to get the help you need. There are a lot of people out here that genuinely care. I care. My name is Darlene J. Clark. I've got my name on some as a contact information. Give me a call sometime. I understand. NASCA has a Zoom support group on Sundays, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 p.m. Eastern. I implore you that you will find other survivors there as well. We will understand. We will not judge you. We'll be there for you. And I want to thank Bill for that as well.
Yeah, you bet.
But I get really heated over this. I get really heated because too many kids and our society are going missing. We are lucky the people that survive, like me and Cynthia, you, Victoria, all of us, Bill, all of us, we should be victorious. I love Victoria's name because of being victorious. I love that, you know. And, you know, we are rising above it. We are changing the norm because we are doing something about it, doing our best to do something about it. We are reaching our hands out. We want somebody to grab our hands. Come on, NASCA show. Share your stories. We're here for you. Call support. If you don't feel like telling your story, you can even use an alias. Darlene J. Clark's my alias, by the way, y'all. Okay? So it's okay to use an alias. This is my alias. You know, I have to use an alias to keep myself safe.
I used to feel that way because of my stupid brother. But I don't care anymore. I don't care. I don't even know if he's alive. I don't care.
But when you delve into the world of also sex trafficking and stuff, and that's a big organization and business and stuff, you do kind of get fearful for your safety.
I know. I know how you feel, honey. You guys did a wonderful job tonight, and Darlene, I'm so proud of you. I really am. And I already got my 90-second cue. So we had a wonderful show tonight. There's a lot of information that came out. And understand our passion. Because when, you know, we try to give as much information as we can all at once so that people can understand, okay, they can learn. And then maybe, too, they'll start caring and not looking the other way. Okay? I've seen a lot of that, too. So anyway, I want to thank everybody that called in. I want to thank everybody who's listening. And I know there's people who are listening. And it's okay if you just want to listen. Better to listen, to learn. And let me tell you something. Watch yourselves. We're living in a crazy world. God bless you. And always listen to NASCA Monday through Friday. Okay, we're here Monday through Friday. And we have guests that come on, and then we also have people like us that come on. This lady's yakking in my ear. I've got to get off. I have 10 seconds. But anyway, all right. So anyway, listen, thank you so much, Darlene and Victoria and Cindy and everybody else who is listening. Good night and God bless.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that's gone.